You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3.
Go time tonight. Maple Leafs in action. Preseason, Lucan, Ontario. Step one of the pursuit of a Stanley Cup. How do you feel about that, Noodles? Bodog?
Good for them. Hopefully. I hope it works out. I hope they go on a long playoff run and Overdrive is on site.
Yeah, it's going to be fun tonight. And it's a preseason game. The outcome is completely meaningless. It's all about health. But John Tavares is going to have a Maple Leaf uniform on tonight. He's going to play with Marner. And that's a historic moment, right? Like, it is. This is what we've been waiting for.
I fully expect them, both being former London Knights, that they'll try to put on a show. Kadri as well. They're not far from London, Ontario. I'm excited about it.
I kind of feel for Ottawa in a way, because they're playing tonight, too. And does anyone care?
It's just an afterthought.
Does anybody care?
No.
Like, does anybody care? Who's in the lineup for them tonight? I haven't looked at it.
You know what? I have tomorrow's lineup, but I don't think
they have Duchesne playing.
Privy to it.
Oh yeah.
But they don't have Stone. There's no Tkachuk.
I've got
Chris Tierney playing, or Dylan DeMello. The two NHL guys they got for Erik Karlsson?
Yeah, Tierney, Stone. No, just looking at the lineup, like, this is actually just their actual NHL lineup. Dzingel, Duchesne, Formanton, Stone, Ryan, Pyatt, Smith, Colin White to make the team. Magnus Pajarvi, remember him? He extended. Brady Tkachuk is going to play.
Playing tonight?
I think he's playing tomorrow.
Okay. Well, so, anyway, it doesn't matter. I mean, I just...
Yeah.
I'm pointing out.
Not a lot of people in Lucan, Ontario care about what Ottawa's putting on the ice, period.
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting to see tomorrow night how many people are interested in Ottawa, how many people care who Ottawa's putting on the ice.
Yeah, I don't think the Leafs are sending
their best line. Well, 34 is going to be there.
Yeah.
So if
they're spending their top line, it's by the looks of it, I would imagine if their second and third line are playing tonight, they'll send their first and fourth line tomorrow. And then the other, Hayes, you and I were talking, the other 4D that don't play tonight. Really,
yeah, tonight, Riley and Hainsey are playing, Ozhiganov and Dermott are playing. It feels like that's going to be their third pair.
Right.
And then tomorrow, Gardner and Zaitsev will play, and Carrick and Borgman or Rosen or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so
is
they
that
split
Ozhiganov,
it up.
Is he a right-handed D-man?
D-man, pretty big guy by all accounts.
Skates got a bomb for a shot. I think he was the KHL All-Star game up for a harder shot. So it looks like he can bring the pop.
That's who I want to watch tonight. I want to circle him. I will be circling him. I have no idea how he plays. I've never seen him play before.
Right.
If he's going to play, if he's going to make the team and be their opening night as a third-pairing guy, you don't shelter your third-pairing this early into the season. You know, late in the season, playoffs, you can do that. They're going to play 14, 15 minutes a night. So if this guy's going to play 14, 15 minutes a night, you got to know who he is and what he brings to the table. So he's fighting for a spot beginning this evening. Tavares is playing. Sparks and McElhinney are playing tonight. They're fighting for who's going to be the backup. So there are jobs on the line starting this evening. It's going to be fun. It'll be fun to actually watch the Maple Leafs actually play a game.
Yeah. I agree. I'm doing a lot of thinking about that backup spot as well. I kind of feel like it shouldn't be this way, but it probably is Sparks' job to lose ultimately. Even though Curtis McElhinney has done nothing to lose his or to really be out of Toronto, he's been that good since he put on a Leaf jersey. But new GM was his GM last year technically. Dubas running the Marlies.
It's an interesting move, though, for a team that's in it to win it. You know, you can't throw away backup wins or losses. So
but
McElhinney's better, they should keep him, in my opinion.
If
if it's close, go with the younger guy. I'm fine with that.
As long as he meshes in a relationship with Frederik Andersen, the relationship between starter and backup can't be overlooked on and off the ice. Because Andersen got help from McElhinney. We'll get into it later.
Yeah, Bob McKenzie will join us in about 15, 20 minutes. Leafs preseason starting tonight. But we've got a guy on the line. We were talking about this guy yesterday.
Yeah.
And I spoke with Perlman years ago on my show. And he and I, we follow each other on Twitter. And he's a great follow on Twitter. He's a New York Times best-selling author of 8 books. Maybe the go-to sports author in the game. And he's got a new one out, Football for a Buck, The Crazy Rise and Crazier Demise of the USFL. And he joins us now. Here is Jeff Perlman. How you doing, Jeff?
You know, in your introduction of me, you forgot to mention that he's an aspiring Canadian who just wants to be saved from this mess going on right now.
Is that right? I pick up on that on your Twitter feed, man. You get sucked into that rabbit hole, man. You're going at people. You're tweeting about different things. I mean, yeah. Trump, is it fair or unfair with this book being out and Trump being, I don't know if he's a prominent member or character within the book, but he was a former owner of a team in the USFL. Can you use that to your advantage in a weird way, selling that Trump does play a role in this book?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a double-edged sword. I think a lot of people are just sick of hearing about him. I've never been, I don't know what it's like up there in relation to this, but I don't remember a time period in my life where you've had a public figure who's so ubiquitous in everything you talk about. And I think people are tired of it. So on the one hand, he's a fascinating USFL character. I mean, he kind of ruined the USFL. And on the other hand, it was such a fun football league that you hate for it to just turn into political talk.
So how did he basically ruin the league?
All right. So the league started, it was a spring football league. It was spring. It started in 1983. And it was a really good idea. Spring football instead of fall, 18 game seasons. Our drafts are going to be regionally based in large part. So the Tampa Bay Bandits are going to be adding a lot of Florida State players, so on and so on. The idea being that fans would sort of roll with your teams. And it was a good idea. First season was a pretty successful season overall, 12 teams. Heading into the second season, 84, Donald Trump buys the New Jersey Generals. They were for sale. And in the lead up to buying the team, he's all about the USFL. This league is great. I love what they're doing. I'm really excited to be a part of it. As soon as he is officially owner of the New Jersey Generals, this is a joke. We need to be in the fall. Fall is where it's at. If God wanted football in the spring, he wouldn't have invented baseball. He has a secret meeting with Pete Rozelle, the commissioner of the NFL at the time, right around this time, and says, I don't really care about the USFL. I want an NFL franchise. What do I have to do to get into the NFL? Pete Rozelle tells him, as long as he's commissioner, Donald Trump will never have a team in the NFL. Donald Trump then leads this push for the NFL to move to fall because he believes what will happen is if he pushes to fall, eventually the NFL will be forced to merge. And if the NFL merges, Donald Trump will wind up with a team in New York City because the Jets had just moved to New Jersey. So there's a big void in New York. So basically he sort of bullies, lies, talks about the TV deals waiting for the fall. He's had talks with all the networks and all very excited about the USFL. That just was not true whatsoever. Convinces the other owners that moving to fall is a way to go. There's a lot to the story, but ultimately they end up announcing a move to fall, suing the NFL. Trump guarantees that the other owners that the NFL will settle, that they'll be so terrified. They don't settle, and the lawsuit proves disastrous to the USFL. They win a dollar, and the league dies.
Doesn't sound like Trump's secret meetings.
Lying about all the different details.
No, it's not.
No.
Yeah. Wait, I'll tell you one. Really crazy is he passes prologue times 1,000. It really is with the USFL. He signed Doug Flutie, the later fantastic CFL quarterback, out of Boston College. So Doug Flutie's first team he ever played for were the New Jersey Generals. And he signed him to the biggest contract in pro football history coming out of college. And he promised his colleagues with the Generals, don't worry, we're going to sign him, but the other teams are going to wind up paying most of his contract. And he actually wrote a letter to the other owners and the commissioner saying, I've done the USFL great service by signing Doug Flutie. This is great for the league, and I expect all of you to contribute. And I was researching this right around the same time. He was saying over and over again in America, we're going to build a wall. Mexico is going to pay for it. He was going to sign Doug Flutie. The other owners are going to pay for it. And I kept saying, this is the same crap 30 years earlier. It's the same playbook, man. It really is the same playbook. So there you go.
Wow, that's wild. With Jeff Perlman, he's got a new book out, Football for a Buck, The Crazy Rise and Crazier Demise of the USFL. Putting Trump aside here, you guys, I mean, in the book, a lot of untold stories, 400 different interviews, stories that obviously are about the 80s and drug excess and fights between players and owners. Is there one story in particular, non-Trump story, that sticks out where if you were selling somebody on this book, this would be the story you would detail?
Oh, yeah. My favorite character. So there's a guy named Greg Fields. He played for the Baltimore Colts in 1979 as a rookie. And he was the lowest paid guy in the roster. He was a free agent at Grambling. And he nicknamed the guys who made a lot of money Big Paper. So they'd walk by and he'd be like, hey, Big Paper. So his nickname became Big Paper. And so he was known throughout football as Big Paper. And in 1981, he was in camp with the Atlanta Falcons, and they cut him, and Big Paper refused to leave. He just wouldn't leave. So I had to bring in an armed security guard to escort him out. And that was it for him in the NFL. But the USFL would take pretty much anyone. He signs with the LA Express. In 1984, John Hadle, the coach of the Express, causing Greg Fields to cut him. And he says, you know, Greg, you've really done a great job here. But before he can finish, Greg Fields punches him in the face. And security has to come in and drag Greg Fields out. And he starts calling in death threats to the team. I'm going to kill the coach. I'm going to show up at the next game and shoot him. And he has a gun he keeps in his car. And the Express got really freaked out. And they hired this guy, Nelson Mercado, who at the time was Liberace's bodyguard. And I hired Nelson Mercado to come in and keep tabs on Greg Fields and watch the coach. And he's following around Greg Fields. He puts a tracer on his car. Greg Fields is showing up at practices, just staring at the coach from across the fence, calling in death threats. And, you know, and everyone knows about it in the USFL. It's a big deal in the USFL. But the league is so crazy. The San Antonio Gunslingers need defensive line help. So they actually signed Greg Fields as a free agent. He joined San Antonio. In 1985, the Gunslingers owner stops paying players. So Greg Fields follows him home one day with a baseball bat, the owner of the team. And he sees he lives in a mansion. And the owner gets out of the car. Greg Fields gets out of his car. And he says, I see where you live. I know you have money. I want to get paid. And the owner's terrified. Greg Fields is 6'7", 280 pounds. He goes, wait here. And he goes inside and he comes back out with a paper bag filled with $17,000 in cash and gives it to Greg Fields. And Greg Fields is never seen again.
Wow. That's how you get rid of a problem. 17 grand in cash. That gets rid of Big Paper.
My son and I, we had no way of finding Greg Fields. Nobody knew where he was. Nobody. I found two addresses for him. My son and I tracked him down in San Francisco. And, you know, we wound up, me and my nine-year-old kid and the guy who threatened to kill his coach, eating Cold Stone Creamery at a mall in Sacramento, California.
Was he terrifying or what?
No, he was awesome. You know, he's 61 years old now. He's not exactly threatening to kill anyone. He was great. He was great.
With Jeff Perlman, the author of Football for a Buck, The Crazy Rise and Crazier Demise of the USFL. You can find it wherever books are sold. And you've written a lot of books, a lot of sports books, books about Favre, the Lakers dynasty, the Cowboys dynasty. You wrote a book about Walter Payton. And generally speaking, just following your career from afar, whenever you write these books, someone gets pissed off at you. And I remember when the Payton book came out, Ditka was rattled, and he took shots at you publicly and on the record. Is there anyone taking a run at you from the USFL that, you know, isn't happy with your work, or someone that's reached out? What kind of reaction have you heard from the actual characters involved in the book?
I just want to say, in Mike Ditka's defense, he only threatened to spit on me.
Right. That was it. True. No physical harm, just spitting
no
on you.
Harm. I've had nothing, but it's only been out a week, so you got to give it a little more time. But I've had most of the guys from USFL honestly view this as like a great giant fraternity party, and they were so happy to talk about it. So it's not quite the same as dealing with a sort of legacy like Walter Payton's or Brett Favre's, where there's some delicate elements to it. The USFL was just like a big frat party.
I guess Trump would be the only guy that might reach out, right? Would you be honored by that if Trump or Trump's people reached out to you?
I want a tweet. I want the fake news tweet. I'm begging for the fake news. If you guys have any, hookups, and you give me a fake news tweet.
Yeah, I'm not sure we can do that.
I think he would.
I don't think
you
should be honored anymore. Everyone gets the fake news.
It would be
actually.
It would be the failing Jeff Perlman.
Failing Jeff Perlman.
So sad.
P-E-R-L instead of P-E-A-R-L.
So sad.
And then he would capitalize. He would capitalize sad for no reason.
Yeah. And he'd also say everyone knows it, too.
Everyone knows it. Fake news.
Right. You are fake news.
There it is. we can drop a soundbite for you. That's about all we can do
for
you.
That'd be great. I'll take it.
The book again, Football for a Buck, The Crazy Rise and Crazier Demise of the USFL. He is Jeff Perlman. Great catching up with you, man. Good luck with the book going forward, and we'll see where the next one comes out, and I'm sure we'll get you on again down the road. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you so much. Take care.
There's Jeff Perlman. Yeah, I remember when he wrote that Walter Payton book.
Ditka was
furious with him because he wrote a lot of sensitive stuff about Payton and about his personal life. And
yeah,
you know, like, he's an investigative journalist. He digs deep. When he sinks his teeth into a book, he interviews.
He's not just talking to somebody's aunt.
No. Yeah. There's no page filling material. It's not like there's empty calorie chapters or stories. Like, this guy digs deep. And Ditka obviously has a connection with Walter Payton, and Payton had passed away, I believe, at that point. And Ditka was not happy with him. Ditka's kind of disappeared off the national scene.
Mm-hmm. Ditka could show up at your house with a bat.
He fell asleep on the air a couple years ago.
Did?
Yeah.
He gave the Pete Rose?
Yeah, legit. Like, he was snoozing.
He's been pretty close anyway, for sure.
He was. Isn't it on YouTube?
Was he asleep, like full-blown asleep?
Then he just wakes up and he's like, yeah.
No, I didn't see that.
Pete Rose in a bow tie, asleep, and then Ditka.
It's almost unfair. It's these older guys who have been around the block for a long time.
Hey, no kidding, but...
Yeah.
Bobby Mack's not 14. You don't see him sleeping on TV.
No, it's true, man. If the lights are on and the cameras are off, you can't fall asleep on TV.
How do you get to that point where you're just...
What's happened on radio?
I've been dead tired. I have been dead tired in the studio at 3 o'clock in the morning because of the game.
Some of those NHL Network shifts.
Oh, but even TH2N, you're waiting for the game out west that's gone into double overtime, and then you got to tape your show. You're dead tired.
You can't even think.
You may nod off, but I guess the producer would wake you up before you go live.
Well, you guys have seen the video of Mike Francesa, the New York radio host who fell asleep during the show. Have you seen that?
I don't think I've seen that.
Oh, yeah. It was...
Like face down or like...
So, this is what happened. He was interviewing a guy. He was interviewing, like, the Yankees beat reporter for the station.
Right.
And the guy was kind of jabbering on for a couple of minutes, and he started to doze, and his head went down because his show is simulcast on TV.
I'm watching it right now.
And he's out. And then the guy is still talking when he catches himself. He only falls asleep for like 15 seconds.
Yeah.
But he gets up and he's stunned. And you could tell he was so asleep to the point where he didn't know
where he was.
Was I asleep for 10 minutes? Was I asleep for 10 seconds? He's absolutely dazed and confused.
Doesn't he have a producer?
Yes.
So the maybe that wasn't paying attention.
Or that's how he woke up. The producer said, "Hey, Mike, the hell are you doing, man? Like, we're on TV here, dude." And he claimed fake news and he denied it. He said he hadn't fallen asleep. He just said he was resting his eyes or something ludicrous like that. And the next day he came in and said he had a long day and he was at the hospital or something the night before with his kids. But he blatantly fell asleep on radio.
Well, you can own it. Be like, yeah, I fell asleep. He's interviewing a guy named Sweeney Murty. So maybe this guy was so boring that he's just had enough.
It's pretty insulting for Sweeney. Like, how bad of a radio interviewer are you when the host is falling asleep?
He does look. I'm just watching. He woke up and he is stunned.
He's out.
Rattled. He doesn't know what to do. He's like, what did I hear? What did I miss? And where do I go from here?
Are we on the air? Is the show over?
That would be horrifying.
Mike Francesa, full blown asleep. Bob McKenzie will join us, our hockey insider, on the Leafs debut in the preseason tonight. What do you expect out of Tavares? The latest on Nylander, Matthews, and Babcock. What's going on around the league? Bobby Mack back on the show next. And joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline is our hockey insider.
He had a teenage hashtag in the summertime, too. In Italy, hashtag never coming home.
Is that right? I don't remember seeing that.
Nothing I think I that. Saw it. I
he
think.
Did. He, you did see it, but... I feel the same way. Italy is ridiculous.
All right.
It's the greatest place on earth.
Here's Bob McKenzie. Bob, do you want to defend your hashtag?
No. Put it this way. I'm back. That's all that matters.
You sound
did you,
very
in fact,
excited.
Do that, though?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. I thought
I didn't want to come back.
Weren't you in the Amalfi Coast?
Yes, I was. It was beautiful.
It is. It's the best. Like, it's so picturesque. And the food... You've never had
the food, the wine, and then we went from Positano and the Amalfi Coast up to Tuscany for a few days, and then a couple of days in Rome, and it's just what I've discovered very quickly here, because I've not done a lot of traveling, and certainly not to Italy for any great... I was in Torino for the Olympics, but that was all work, no play, and at the time that I was at Torino, I felt like I was in Hamilton as opposed to anywhere exotic. And because it's a real industrial city. But what I discovered very quickly is you could take a two-week vacation to Italy every year for 10 years and not even begin to come close to see everything. For a country that's not ridiculously large, like it's, you know, it's not Canada, the United States, not this great vast mass of land. Man, there's so many places to go and things to do, and just a great country.
Yeah.
When you got back, summer. When you got back to the cottage, did any fellow employees or co-workers make it up to the cottage this year or no? Quizmaster?
Quizmaster was there for 4 hours.
That's about right before you kick him out.
He came in 12:30, was gone at 4. So it was perfect.
That's about all you need.
Yeah.
Of him it is.
Perfect. So we were talking about this earlier. Matthews is not playing tonight, but he revealed some information today that, based on his understanding, he's going to be on a top power play unit with Tavares and Marner, and you fill out the rest, and he doesn't have Hyman on his wing, which I don't know exactly what happened there or why Babcock came to the conclusion that he was going to change that up, but Babcock had always been committed to Hyman on his wing, and that's no longer the case. And you tell me if I'm making too much out of this, but kind of feels like that meeting in Arizona in late April, the Matthews camp might have won that battle because Babcock is changing something for some reason, and it seems like Matthews is benefiting from it.
Yeah, you could make that argument. I don't know how much of it is fact, how much of it is fiction. That's going to be the narrative for sure, is that there's an appeasement here and that Hyman's gone and Marlowe's going to be there, and Marlowe's and Babcock's rationalization is very simple. And now that we've got John Tavares playing with Mitch Marner, I want somebody who can cycle the puck and play the down low game with Tavares and Marner, and I want somebody who's more dangerous off the rush, that would be Patrick Marlowe, to play with Matthews and Nylander once Nylander arrives. And whatever the case may be, that's, it's Toronto, and the whole, Matthews, Babcock relationship dynamic is going to get, pulverized as people look at it from seven ways to Sunday. The flip side of that would be, well, if it went so well that Matthews doesn't have a letter on his jersey and Tavares and Marlowe and Riley do. So, that's the flip side argument, is that, I don't think Babcock's making a statement there saying I'm the boss and you're not. I think what the statement that was being made was, we're not giving any of our kids anything too soon, and everybody's going to have to earn what they get, and we're going to give the letters to a guy who's been a captain for a long time in the National Hockey League in John Tavares, and we're going to give it to a 39-year-old, and we're going to give it to what's now a veteran defenseman on our team, and we're not going to separate Matthews from Marner and Nylander, and they're all, they're all young players, and they're all core players, and we love them, but we're going to give these letters to the other guys. So, as I say, everything will get analyzed on the basis of, was there a rift at the end of the season, and did the, did the visit to Arizona have anything to do with that? Or, because I don't think Babcock had a rift with Freddie Anderson, but he went to Denmark too, so who knows?
Well, with the RFAs, there's Nylander in Toronto, there's Reinhardt. When do you think is the real first, critical point where it's, that if it goes past that, I know it's important. They want the kids in training camps. It's, they got to get their legs underneath them for the regular season. But when is it go time? This is on and could get ugly. Start of the regular season, obviously.
I think it's graduated a little bit. The absolute go time is regular season. But even if they just sign on the eve of the regular season, they've missed all of training camp. They've missed all the preseason games. Which, there's too many preseason games to begin with. You only want it. I think most National Hockey League players at this stage of the game, being the kind of shape that they're all in, if they can play a couple of preseason games, they're good to go. But, I would think the optimal time for any of these guys, Nylander included, to come back would be by the weekend. If you can get something done by the weekend, then there's a whole slate of games next week. Mm-hmm. The Leafs play Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. So there's a choice of games to get them in, and gives the team a chance to work the various power plays to have your team be, Babcock likes to set his lines fairly early, and Babcock also likes, if I remember correctly, usually the second to last exhibition preseason game is usually almost the opening night lineup, and then quite often sometimes the Saturday night he'll go with a different lineup. But because the Leafs generally play the Friday, Saturday, the last weekend of preseason, Friday, Saturday night with back-to-back. So, but yeah, I would think the first window to try and get this done and not negatively impact your training camp would be get him in by the weekend. But worst case scenario, you want to get him in by the beginning of the regular season.
Any other rumblings with some of the other RFAs kicking around? I think there's five prominent guys that are still unsigned.
Yeah, no, I haven't heard anything on that front. We knew once Morrissey signed that Nurse probably wouldn't be far behind and in the same universe. And some people would say, well, that's the same sort of thing Shea Theodore should get with the Vegas Golden Knights. But I think the situation in Vegas is a little different. I think that's a case where the club really wants to get a long-term deal done and doesn't want to do a bridge. And they're not even maybe talking about that. So, but the other guys that are out there, Nick Ritchie hasn't signed in Anaheim, Sam Reinhart in Buffalo, Nylander in Toronto. I don't believe Miles Wood has signed with New Jersey Devils yet.
That Nick Ritchie might be sitting a while, Bobby. I got a feeling that they might want to make an example out of him. He just doesn't have the numbers. I know he had some first-line stints with Getzlaff and Perry, but I mean, come on.
The end of the day, the reality is, and everybody knows this, they don't have leverage. They've got virtually zero leverage other than withholding your services. And you know, and even that, I mean, that's playing a dangerous game, thinking that you alone are enough to torpedo a team's hopes to get out of the gate quickly. Now, in Vegas, I mean, you got Nate Schmidt's got a 20-game suspension, and so Theodore might feel like, hey, you know what, if they don't have me and they don't have Schmidt, then they're running a deficit here, and maybe my leverage goes up once we start playing regular season games. But at the end of the day, you don't really have much leverage, because if you do decide to really go to the wall and say, I'm not playing any games until I get the deal that I want, A, there's a deadline in the recent CBAs, December 1. If you're not signed by December 1, you can't play for the rest of the year. That's number one. And if let's assume for a moment, in the rare, almost unheard of instance in these days, let's assume a restricted free agent says, yeah, you know what? If I don't get the deal, I'm not going to play. I'll sit a year if I have to. Okay, we'll sit a year. You come back the next year and you think, okay, I'm ready to go now. I want to do the deal. And you're like, and they're like, okay, yeah, we're just start talking about what we talked about last year, because nothing changed. You have no more leverage than you had a year ago. You're not 1 year closer to free agency. You're not 1 year closer to anything. You don't have any extra tools in the toolkit other than withholding services. So it's not like you're, it's not like you gain anything by sitting out other than losing all the money you otherwise would make. So it's not an advantageous negotiating position, but I understand why the players will use whatever leverage they have, try to make things a little uncomfortable to the club, and squeeze another 100K out of them or what have you.
Well, with that being the case, really what they're negotiating is what category the player's in. And what I mean by that is, McDavid didn't have any leverage, but obviously he was getting $12
million. Obviously. Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Eichel didn't have any leverage. Now, I think they overpaid him, but still, they gave him 10 years at $8 million. Matthews has the same leverage, or will have the same leverage, mm-hmm. as Nylander and Marner.
8 at 10?
Yeah. Yeah, so that's whatever. You know what I mean. And the point I'm making is, the teams could do that with those players, too, but they choose not to. So I get the impression, right. Like, in Nylander's case, he's saying, no, I'm with those guys. I'm not with these other plugs who you're treating like garbage, you know.
Right.
I'm a stud. And that's really what the debate is, how the team really feels about the player.
Yeah, it is. And I talked a little bit about this on Leafs Lunch yesterday, and I think you're right. I think from Nylander's position, he's saying, okay, I'll do a long-term deal, but you know, maybe it should be closer to Dreisaitl's 8.5 than Nick Ehlers 6 or David Pastrnak's 6.6. 6.67 rather, and the Leafs probably think it's more in that that latter universe, so they don't agree on that. And then if they don't agree on valuation on a long-term deal, well, then maybe you have to try and do the bridge deal. I mean, maybe nobody wants to do that right now, but if I'm the Leafs and if I'm Kyle Dubas, I'm looking at this one very carefully and saying, I got to be real careful here. This is my first big kick at the cat in terms of negotiating a really important contract for a core offensive player on our team. And I've got to be careful, because what I do here could impact in a negative way what happens with Matthews and Marner. And so I think it behooves Dubas and the Leafs to make sure that they do this judiciously. And yet he is a core offensive guy, but some people might argue that he's at the lower end of that core young guy compared to, say, Matthews, for example. And so it'll be interesting to see. And we don't expect either Matthews or Marner to do anything quickly. So, you know, Nylander is in a vacuum right now. He's got to make his move. And I heard MJ talking about this on That's Hockey last night. So, you know, the argument's going to be, hey, we want to keep the band together for a long time here. So you need to give us a little bit of a discount here if you're going to do a long-term deal. And Nylander's probably thinking, yeah, okay, no problem. But what if Matthews and Marner don't take the discount and I do, and now I'm signed in for 6 or 7 years and then I feel like an idiot? So he wants to try and get full value for what he thinks he's got.
With Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider, I'm just seeing on Twitter that Michael Delzato of the Canucks is talking about Fortnite and how much the rookies play it and kids. And this is a thing league-wide. When you talk with GMs, Bob, does Fortnite ever come up? And do they have any legitimate concerns about how much gaming these kids are playing right now?
Well, I think any GM has any concern about any player doing anything excessively. You know, sometimes there's the odd case where some guys work out too much. I mean, you got it in there like, you know what, you're tired, you're overdoing it, back off. If you have players who are staying up and not getting sleep because they're playing video games, then it's a problem. The video game's not the problem. It's just anything to excess. So it you know, I mean, this just kind of gives you some idea of how the game's changed, because long before O and Noodles played the game, but certainly while we were in O's wheelhouse and Noodles' wheelhouse, the issue wasn't excessive video game playing.
No.
It was lifestyle. excessive just about everything else.
Yeah.
and probably more detrimental in the grand scheme of things. But if you're not getting sleep and all you do is playing video games, but you know, there's, I don't know. I don't think banning video games. I mean, don't take video games on the road. A lot of these teams, a lot of the most successful teams in the National Hockey League, the Washington Capitals won a cup last year. Chicago Blackhawks, when they were winning their cups, they were Mario Karting all the merry day long. I mean, it was part of their team bonding. They were having fun with it. It obviously wasn't detrimental and what have you. So I think sometimes we like to pick on the millennials and the fact that some of these guys are wound up about Fortnite and some of the video games they play. But I think the vast majority of players understand that, too much of anything is not good for you. But there's going to be some guys that are fully addicted to it, and they spend the whole night playing it, and that's stupid, because not because it's a video game, but because it's any activity that keeps you from doing what you're supposed to be doing as a
right.
professional athlete.
Yeah, I mean, we've all heard stories. You guys, I'm sure, have played with guys. Like, I've heard stories, which I don't know if they're true or not, that veteran players get hooked on golf, and they're playing in Arizona. They're playing like 36 holes before they go and play.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah,
you know, like
guys are coming in sunburned. And
right.
In the old days, sometimes a guy would show up with a sunburn, and you're like, well, where did he get that? Well, he played 36 holes of golf on a game day or something. You know, that's stupid. But I mean, it was no different than any of us who are parents and are teenage kids got cell phones. And I know from experience that, you know, they'd be up all night texting their friends and messaging and MSN messaging and whatever. And then at some point you're like, okay, enough, you know, smarten up, because you can't go to school and message your friends all night. And they figure it out, or they should. And if they don't, then the game takes care of them.
Right. The game. I like that. MSN Messenger. I haven't heard of that in a while.
Yeah, exactly. That's why.
That was my go-to back in the day.
Old school messaging.
ICQ was before that. Remember ICQ? Were you guys on that? You guys were in the NHL by that point.
We didn't. We were dealing with the other stuff, the off ice. What Bob was talking about, the excess.
Those
fun.
Those stories are way more interesting than excessive Fortnite.
I think that's the problem here. Like, people are goofing on Fortnite because it's boring. I don't want to hear about you playing Fortnite.
See, Noodles. Yeah. I've never heard of somebody excessive Fortnighting and needing a helicopter to get them back to practice in time, but that's another story for another day that's not on the radio.
Yeah, exactly. The 7-minute helicopter from a suburb to downtown. Yeah, needed that.
That sounds like the kind of story I want to hear.
I'll take that. It's a better story.
It's a way better story.
Sitting in a hotel room.
Some guy racked up an all-time record points in Fortnite. Who cares? Yeah. Tell me about the helicopter and the Playboy Mansion. Exactly. All right, Bob. Good to have you back. We'll do it again on Thursday.
One final thing. I was just on Kijiji, and I'm looking for a new chair for my office, and some guy named Pierre Lebrun is selling a chair on Kijiji. I was wondering if you might let me know if that's a good chair to buy.
I might want to just scrape it along the floor to see what it sounds like.
Well, it's got a hole in the middle of it. That's the problem.
Looks like a grenade went off right in the house.
Yeah, that's a no guy. I would delete that account quickly, Bob.
No.
Run for the hills.
Just checking.
All right, man. Good luck with that.
Thanks, guys.
There's Bob McKenzie, our hockey insider.
See, we hadn't talked about it for a couple days.
We thought it was gone.
And Bobby Mack brings it right back full circle.
The Undertaker, he's back to life. There's life left in the Pierre Lebrun chair clip.
See, we're going to have to run with that clip. It's just we haven't had Pierre on to defend himself about it.
We tried to have him on yesterday, but he had stuff going on because he was doing the Maple Leaf pregame and he was doing That's Hockey. So we have extended the invitation. And if he's in the building, he can walk in at any point.
Yeah. And if you don't know what we're talking about, after the break, we'll let you hear the full clip and you can make a determination.
All right. We'll do that. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine. It's Leaf Sense pregame at 7 p.m. First exhibition game of the season. That's coming up later tonight on TSN 1050. This is Overdrive on the TSN app. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Aaron Judge back for the Yankees, but Boston's paying $2 at Yankee Stadium. I'll take the Red Sox. Philly home plus against the Mets. Fading the Orioles. I'm back on the Jays tonight. I'm expecting more than 2,000 people at Camden Yard.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so tonight.
A bounce back. Bounce back for the fans.
About 4,000 people tonight. Throw down 20, you can score 102. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. If Elton Brand has any dummy Twitter accounts, he better delete them and erase them.
Is he up to no good now?
No, he's the new GM of the Philadelphia 76ers. Ooh. He is taking over the role that Brian Colangelo
once held. Dude, I thought he was still playing.
No, he's been out for a while. He was a Band-Aid late in his career, and I guess he's been in the basketball operations with Philly for the past couple of years. He must have made the right impact or right impression with the owner, and he's the new guy. So if he's got any shady stuff going on online, you better
smarten up.
Smarten up quickly. Because Brian Colangelo dropped the grenade on his career, and I don't know if we're ever going to hear from him again.
You never will.
You don't think so? I think he'll resurface a couple of years.
So?
Yeah, I think there's
That is what you call career, you know what.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nobody. Well, there's rumors that there was a coach in the NHL that tried to pull some backdoor stuff and go behind the. And he was a former coach of the year in the NHL. And once you get caught doing that,
sit. Done.
You will sit around forever. And you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
He came back for
a
brief stint. Yeah.
I think we all know who it is.
Yeah. It was Ted Nolan.
Yeah, it was Ted Nolan.
Former coach of the year, was in Buffalo, his son plays in the NHL.
We know who it was.
Yeah.
That's who it was.
Yeah, but he did get a second shot.
Dude, he did for what, 2 months?
And
that was like 10 years after the fact.
And it was like cleanup duty late in the season. The Sabres were a joke.
Yeah.
That might have been going into the McDavid draft, actually. It wasn't that long ago. But Colangelo, I don't know, man. He's got his dad's a big shooter in the basketball world. He won 2 Executive of the Year awards. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. A lot of times in the moment, we say these crazy things. Nothing can ever change. Nothing can ever happen.
Right, right.
Society evolves.
I think 3 or 5 years. He could resurface. You never know, though.
You never know. I don't think he's walking into another GM job right away.
No.
But maybe a consultant. They kind of slide him in somewhere.
And all of a sudden, he resurfaces.
Maybe. Leaf sends tonight in Lucan, Ontario. Have either of you been to Lucan before?
No.
Never heard of it. All I've heard of is there's this big thing about the town where there was these Irish dudes way back in the day called the Donnelly Brothers. They were nutso.
Really?
That's more than I knew.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Where'd you hear that?
My parents.
So they're familiar with Lucan?
Just about this family.
Oh, okay. I never heard of it either prior to this week.
Yeah, I didn't know. I've never heard the name of the town.
I've never heard of Lucan.
Usually, like, traveling all around Ontario as a youth, like, I know every little town.
Yeah.
But this is one that's new to me.
Yeah, I'm not familiar. Remember,
the first thing I thought of is they can't have a rink big enough to for this.
It's a junior rink. There's not going to be a lot of people in the building.
But do you remember he was like, yeah, my family go on trips and we saw the big coins and all that?
In Sudbury, yeah. You and the Griswolds earlier in your life.
The big nickel.
Yeah, I was totally ignorant to that. Like family trips around Ontario?
Yeah. Driving around in the station wagon.
I guess, man.
We're not Donald Trump. Like, try it out. You don't have to go to Bahamas and Hawaii like everyone else in the world. Go to the big nickel.
Go to Sudbury. Go to Lucan.
Exactly. That's where we're going, Lucan. We're going to be talking about it tomorrow. I won't be because I'll be working.
We're going to have the little beagle in here tomorrow, and we're going to be kicking that show off at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.